Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So, Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, it's been all right. I mean, obviously, the Lancs are doing really well, as we'll talk about in a bit, in the Championship at the moment, so that's really good to see. Unfortunately, the IPL has been cancelled now, which is obviously a shame, but I guess it's the safest thing since the bubbles have been breached. So, yeah, I mean, that's disappointing in one sense, but also, as I said, the safest option in another. So, yeah, we'll see whenever that tournament gets back underway. Yeah, who knows when that's going to be. But obviously, we've got a rescheduled date for the PSL, but there's no county players in that anymore because it's in June. So, yeah, I guess we'll see what happens with the IPL.
Yeah, it's all we can do, isn't it? It is a massive shame, of course. The Premier T20 franchise tournament in world cricket has been postponed. But as you rightfully said, Joe, public health does take precedent. Okay, sometimes there are more important things than cricket and health, the safety, the well-being. Players, support staff, coaches, franchise owners, players just involved in the IPL itself. It does take paramount importance. So also just another thing just to mention to our Indian listeners out there. We here at the County Cricket Podcast are all thinking of you. We're wishing you very, very well. We're wishing everyone affected by this awful pandemic a very, very speedy recovery. And of course, we will all get through this. Okay, we will. It'll take time, but we'll all go through this. But Joe, I suppose we have to talk about this week's County Championship games because, again, the County Championship is delivering week in, week out. Call it Amazon Prime. We may as well be sponsored by Amazon Prime at this point because there is just brilliant cricket after brilliant cricket. Great matches after great matches. And this week in the fourth round of the 2021 LV County Championship was no different. So before we go into the key analysis, the talking points and the key moments from this week's round of games, we do, of course, have the results and the tables. So we'll start with Group 1. The big one, arguably, of this week, Notts beat Derbyshire by 310 runs at the Encora Ground in Derby. Durham secured their first win of the season by hammering Warwickshire by an innings and 127 runs up at the Riverside. And finally, Worcestershire and Essex played out a high-scoring draw at New Road. Moving on to Group 2 then, and we'll start down at the Oval because Surrey beat Hampshire by an innings and 289 runs. Gloucestershire beat Leicestershire by 4 wickets in an incredibly close game in Bristol. And finally, Somerset beat Middlesex by 4 wickets in Taunton. And last but by no means least, moving on to Group 3. Joe, mate, I know you're going to be very happy looking at this because Lancashire continued their excellent start to the season with a comprehensive 5-wicket victory over Sussex down in Hove. Glamorgan absolutely annihilated Kent by 10 wickets down in Sapphire Gardens. And finally, Yorkshire beat Northamptonshire by just 1 run in an incredibly tight affair up at Emerald Headingley. So, of course, they're the results, but how do each of the tables look? And although it wasn't the greatest weeks for Warwickshire, ahead of me now is the Group 1 table staring me in the face because Warwickshire County Cricket Club are still top of the Group 1 table on 54 points. Second are Durham on 53 points. Worcestershire in third on 52 points. Notts in fourth on 51. Essex are currently in fifth on 49. And in sixth place are Derbyshire on 40 points. Moving on to Group 2, Gloucestershire, after their incredibly impressive start to the season, are currently occupying the top spot on 74 points. Somerset in second on 60, Hampshire in third on 59, Surrey are in fourth on 46, Middlesex are in fifth on 37 points, and finally Leicestershire in sixth on 25 points. Now again, Joe, I know you're going to be very, very, very happy this week because guess who's top of Group 3? Yep, you've guessed it. Lancashire County Cricket Club are currently top of Group 3 with 79 points. Yorkshire second on 73. Sussex are third on 48. Northants are fourth on 44. Glamorgan are fifth also on 44 points. And finally, Kent are in sixth on just 24 points. And we'll discuss Kent's start to the season as the podcast progresses. But Joe, I suppose there's only one place to start this week, and that is, of course, Group 1. And we have to start at the Encora Cricket Ground in Derby. Because it has finally happened. We have been talking about this ever since the inception of the County Cricket Podcast. How can Nottinghamshire improve and turn around their fortunes in red ball cricket? And after 30 games of draws, losses, no wins, they had the heartbreak at Trent Bridge against Warwickshire earlier this season. You're thinking, surely this can't go on. and they have finally broken their 30-game winless streak. And they did it in absolutely emphatic fashion. Now, before we talk about the game itself, the actual achievement of this Notts side cannot be underestimated in the slightest. They hammered Derbyshire by 310 runs in Derby itself. They have finally won their first game in the county championship since the 23rd of June 2018. That's 1,045 days of that win heading into this game. So first of all, for Notts fans, time to rejoice. The duck has finally been broken. The curse is no more. Nottinghamshire County Cricket Club have finally got a win in the county championship. Also, before we talk about the actual game itself, Joe, I just wanted to ask you, do you remember who actually occupies the most winless streak in county cricket history? Do you remember who that was?
It was Leicestershire.
It was Leicestershire. Yep, 37 games they went without a win.
I remember that.
Yeah, you did. That's very,
I'm
very
really good.
Good
at retaining that kind of information normally.
Very good recall. But yeah, Leicestershire do unfortunately keep that record now then of 37 winless games in the early 2010s. But yeah, Notts have finally broken the duck. And Joe, I want to know your thoughts. I really do want to know your thoughts. First of all, of Stephen Mullaney as captain, because I know that yourself, you've been very, very vocal about potentially having Haseeb Hameed as the captain. So first of all, I want to know if you still believe that, even after this victory. And second of all, just how momentous of an occasion is this for Notts? Do you think that they can build on this momentum and really challenge for the top two, top three spots in an incredibly competitive Group One now?
I think it's... first, I'll start with Mullaney's captaincy. Obviously, the fact that they've won is, I guess you could say, helpful, really, towards him retaining his captaincy. His captaincy role, really. I wouldn't say... I'm not suggesting Notts should do that. I'm just saying maybe they could have looked at that. Now they've won, it's different. But come the end of the season, again, they may not win again this season. Nobody can predict that, you know. Let's say, for example, they don't win again this season, which I don't think will happen, then maybe they need to look to replace Mullaney. But who knows? Look, they've won at the end of the day. That's all that matters for them. What was the other question?
Do you think that they can actually build some momentum from this now?
Oh, yeah. It's, again, tricky because cricket is a very momentum game, isn't it? If you look, let's just use Lancs as an example, Gloucester as well. Mm. Both those teams haven't lost yet. Both teams are doing very well. And I think right now, if those two teams were to come up against each other, that would be the best game that anyone could watch right now in county cricket because, they're the two informed teams. They're the two informed teams right now. They're the two best teams in the country currently. That's not really an argument. Certainly this season on current form. So I think as I said, cricket's a momentum sport and it can only help Notts that win. As you say, that group is very tight. Obviously, Warwickshire somehow still top despite a...
After getting 1 point. We'll talk about that in due course.
Yeah, a very harrowing defeat is probably the best phrase there. So yeah, Warwickshire surprisingly still top. I was surprised to see that, but I just we'll talk about that. So, you know, the fact that Notts have now won, as I say, they can build on that momentum, hopefully for them. Who knows in, 3-4 games' time? Because obviously this kind of championship group is interrupted by T20s, isn't it?
Mm.
So I never understand why they do this personally. They have obviously the whole championship and then 8 or 9 T20s, 3 random championship games and then finish. I never understand that. I really don't. But hopefully for Notts, especially because they're such a good T20 side, hopefully for them, they can get momentum in the T20 or get momentum in a red ball, keep that as they probably will in the T20s. And then keep that going through into the next set of red ball games. As I say, very, very important win for Notts, as we both said. Very important win for Notts. And yeah, really impressive performance, I guess.
Well, it was. And it is so important. It's a pivotal victory in Notts' season. And I suppose beyond that as well. Because on paper, we keep on saying it. And of course, cricket isn't played on paper, is it? That's what's so beautiful about this game. But on paper, you've got guys like Hameed, Duckett, Clark, Slater. You've got all these fantastic batsmen. And it just wasn't working. And for weeks, for months, I mean, even for the past couple of years, people have been questioning what exactly Notts have been missing. What has been the actual problem behind this winless streak? But this week, they were absolutely brilliant. And I think the key, I'm going to be honest, Joe, this week was top order runs. Now, in this particular game, if we look at Notts, there has been a real emphasis on the likes of Hameed and Slater. They have been absolutely fantastic as an opening pairing. Ben Slater this week with a fantastic 107. Hamid in the runs yet again with 94. But the key is, other than those two, there wasn't really much support and much assistance from the rest of the top to mid order. So the likes of Ben Duckett, Joe Clark, Tom Moores weren't really getting many runs. However, this week, that has completely changed. Joe Clark, have to give a massive, massive mention to. We mentioned him earlier in review shows earlier in the rounds. But Joe Clark this week scores of 66 and 53 in what was a pretty low-scoring game for Derbyshire, just completely killed the game. It's as simple as that. And Haseeb Hamid and Ben Slater yet again laying the foundation. Fantastic opening pairing. Joe, I suppose I have to ask, right now, based off of current form, are they the best opening pairing in county cricket right now? Of course, we do have other good opening pairings. I look at the likes of Jake Libby and Daryl Mitchell, for example. For Worcestershire, they've been absolutely incredible this season. Do you think, in your personal opinion, Hamid bias aside, do you think that Ben Slater and Haseeb Hamid are currently the best opening pairing in county cricket in 2021?
Yeah, I'd probably have to say yeah. I mean, I would like to say Davis and Jennings, but unfortunately, as a pair, they've not really kicked on yet. So despite some good individual performances, as we'll talk about. But yeah, you have to say yeah. Look, I know, obviously, in the first inning, I guess their games were indifferent, really. Basically, the opposites of their innings. So obviously, Hamid got a duck and Slater 100. And in the second inning, Slater only got 24 and Hamid got 94. So they kind of had opposite innings, if you like. But, I mean, you'd have to say that they are indeed the best pair. Well, opening pair in the country right now. I'm trying to think of anyone else who's kind of topped them and can't really off the top of my head think. Maybe, mind you, yeah, Weatherly's not scoring many runs for Hampshire, and say maybe Ian Holland and Weatherly are up there, but Weatherly's struggling for Hampshire. So, I guess for me, yeah, is my answer in short.
I'd have to agree, to be honest. I'd have to agree, Jay. Because at the moment, they just look unstoppable. And that's the thing. They've laid so many good foundations for Notts, but they just haven't had that support and assistance over the course of 4 days or two innings. And that in this game completely changed. And of course, in addition to runs, we have to talk about Notts' bowlers, because in this game, they were absolutely exceptional. Luke Fletcher, 5 for 28 from 14.5 overs in the first innings, and then Stuart Broad, 4 for 37 from 13 overs in the second innings. Joe, how impressed were you with the Notts bowlers? I've mentioned there Luke Fletcher and Stuart Broad. Also, Dane Patterson. I've been really, really impressed with him. The South African seamer came over this summer, obviously missed last year when he was meant to be a Colpack for the East Midlands side. But how impressed were you with Notts' bowlers this week? I thought they were absolutely exceptional myself.
Yeah, I guess when, for example, I'll start with Patterson. You know, when he's in overseas, and when you're in overseas, it's a fact that there is loads of pressure on you. There is a lot of pressure to perform. And, you know, Dane Patterson, he got 5 wickets in a match. Not very economical, but I guess you can't really argue. You know, you've got Broad and Fletcher bowling very economical themselves. I think one place where Notts will struggle is obviously when Stuart Broad gets selected for England. I think it's unlikely that England will only pick one of Anderson or Broad. So also Anderson will hopefully be back soon and play for Lancs, just on that note. But I think it's unlikely that Broad and Anderson will be picked separately for the tests in England. So it's going to be interesting to see how Notts cope without him. But I mean, while he's here, you've got to make the most of him, right? So that's certainly what they're doing.
Exactly. And he was brilliant. You have to face facts. Stuart Broad this week was absolutely exceptional. He just looks at his best. He's such a wonderful bowler. 500-plus test wickets. We all know what Stuart Broad's about. He's tall. He's got decent pace. Obviously, he's not an express pace merchant, but still got decent pace, extra bounce, good height as well. He's just an exceptional bowler, really was. And he just had Derbyshire on strings this week. It's as simple as that. Him and Luke Fletcher in tandem together were absolutely exceptional. But Joe, I suppose Nottinghamshire aside, we have to talk about Derbyshire, because in what is an incredibly competitive Group 1, they are beginning to lag behind a little bit. And throughout this entire season so far, I know we're only 4 rounds in, we've spoken at length about that batting order. And this week they did change up. They brought in Tom Wood. But what do you make of the Derbyshire actual top order? Do you still think that the Derbyshire top order is imbalanced? Do you think that there's still areas of improvement? Because let's face it, in this particular game, I'm looking at those two scores of 105 all out and 159 all out. And when we have a look at their runs, where the bulk of the runs are coming from, it's Matt Critchley yet again, scoring 33 in the first innings, and then Ben Aitchison, who's a tail-ender, scoring 50 from 49 in the second. Do you think that Derbyshire can actually find a way to better balance their top to middle order? And if so, how would you go about doing it personally?
Well, firstly, I mean, you mentioned Tom Wood came into the side. I'm not sure where Billy Godman was. Was he dropped? Was he injured? I guess maybe an enforced change was potentially what Derby needed to kind of have a reason to rotate pretty much and try out different, different combinations at the top of the order. So, yeah, I think the fact that Wood came into the side, obviously got 31 in the second innings against, as we said, Fletcher and Broad, two exceptional bowlers. So, yeah, that's not bad. But it's hard, isn't it, to kind of balance a top order? It really is. So, yeah, I think for Derby, they've just got to try and find, you know, their what works for them in the next few games and quickly, because as you say, they're going to end up in the third division almost certainly if they don't. So, yeah, they need to kind of get a move on. It's a bit hard. It sounds a bit harsh, but yeah, I guess that's the reality of it.
If they are going to challenge for Group 2, I think Group 1, I'm going to be honest, because this Derbyshire team are a bit inexperienced. They have been in Division 2 for a number of years now. I do think that they can still challenge for Group 2. I think Group 1's maybe a bridge too far this season. I'm going to be honest, just based on how they're performing so far. But, I mean, personally, I just don't know what else they can actually try out, because the fact is, I'm looking at their batting averages here, and Harvey Hussain has been absolutely fantastic. Didn't necessarily score runs in this game. But other than that, he scored 317 runs at 79. You got Matt Critchley scoring 483 runs. You got Wayne Madsen scoring 273. And then there is a massive, massive drop-off. So the next leading run scorer after Wayne Madsen is Lewis Dupuy on 166 runs. Lewis Rees has 159. And then everybody else is in double-digit runs. So I don't know exactly what they can actually do. Billy Godman is a massive, massive loss. Okay, we understand that at the moment. They can't really do anything about that. Tom Wood did do a decent job coming in for this game and last week's game. But I'm just looking at that batting lineup. What other combinations could they go with, Jokes? I'm almost at a loss as to what they can do to flip their fortunes around.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, I don't really know either. I mean, maybe they bat Brooke Guest up the order, because I don't think he's a number 9 or number 8. I think that's very harsh on Brooke Guest. I know he batted 7 in the second innings, but he batted 4 for Lancs at times. So maybe they try Brooke Guest up the order, but I don't really know. I don't know the ins and outs of, let's say, Derby's second team. They might have somebody they can promote from that. But, you know, it's very hard to know really how to get the balance right when, you know, such critical players effectively are not scoring runs.
Well, mentioning that, Joe, you mentioned about second 11 cricket. Alex Hughes, would you be inclined, given the struggles of someone, the top middle order, but even just bringing him in just to change something up, for example, would you bring in Alex Hughes? Would you be tempted to do that necessarily?
Well, he's not going to do any worse than what is currently happening, is he? So, you know, at the end of the day, Alex Hughes can only keep the same vein of form as what Derby are experiencing right now. So at best, he's obviously going to improve the size. So maybe that's somebody they look to bring in. Maybe that's how they kind of look to go about it. But, you know, as I say, it's very... There's lots of different combinations. Sorry. There's not many different combinations that they can go for, because, you know, these aren't... It's not just one or two people. This is like 4, 5, 6 people who are really struggling. So, yeah, they really need to sort it out, because, as I say, they're going to be struggling. So make Division 2, they're almost certainly going to end up in Division 3.
Well, they do look destined for Division 3 at the moment, but of course, still plenty of cricket to be played. Who knows? Who knows? Derbyshire could turn their fortunes around. And to be fair, from this week, it wasn't all negative, because I just wanted to mention one guy, and that is Finn Hudson-Prentice. He was absolutely exceptional with the ball in this game. Match figures of 8 for 76, was an absolute menace, caused all sorts of problems for the Notts batting lineup. But again, it was just the batting. The bowling wasn't necessarily the issue this week, it was the batting. And I think that 105 all out in the first innings just completely killed the game. Hamid, Duckett, Slater, guys like that just were too good this week. It's as simple as that. But fair play to Notts, finally getting the monkey off the back, finally winning. I mean, this is huge. Notts fans, you should be very, very happy. Of course, you shouldn't be overly proud just yet. Still plenty of work to be done. But yeah, very, very good win for Notts, and could set them up very, very nicely for the rest of the Championship and, of course, the other competitions into the rest of this season. But moving on from Notts Derbyshire then, I suppose we have to talk about the next game, which is, of course, Durham versus Warwickshire. And Joe, you already alluded to it. This was very, very one-sided, I must admit. Now, before I talk about Warwickshire, we have to give immense, immense credit to Durham for being absolutely exceptional, both bat, ball in hand, brilliant with the fielding as well, because this was just an absolute annihilation. Now, fair enough, Durham winning the toss was absolutely massive. It was huge. Overcast conditions, what seemed to be a pretty bowler-friendly surface as well, up at the Riverside on the Thursday. That was a massive, massive toss to win. But with that being said, it's not necessarily just because of the toss. Ben Rain in particular was absolutely lethal. Lethal. Figures of 5 for 9 in the first innings. Markwood as well, back at his best, 3 for 28. And Bryden Carse as well, just to top it all off, 2 for 15. They completely tore our batting lineup to absolute shreds. And then if that brilliant combined bowling display wasn't enough from the speed demons of Wood and Carse, and then the wily customer that is Ben Rain, the batting from Durham was just on another level. After bowling Warwickshire out for 87 runs, I genuinely thought, well, okay, maybe there may be a little bit in the surface. But Alex Lees and Will Young completely killed this game off. Completely killed this game off before it even had a chance to get going. So Alex Lees scored 129, Will Young scored 124, and they produced an absolutely majestic 208-run opening partnership together from just 87 overs. It was brilliant batting. The way in which Alex Lees and Will Young were just defending, digging in, I think for the first 13 or 14 overs, they're going around about one run per over. But after that, it was so impressive to see them come out of their shell, start attacking. Will Young in particular hit some beautiful shots against Danny Briggs, Alex Lees against Craig Miles as well. It was a fantastic batting display from these two in-form openers. And to be honest, that was just brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. Even as a Warwickshire fan, you have to give credit where credit is due to good cricket. And Alex Lees and Will Young definitely produced that this week. And then as if that wasn't enough as well, I suppose the salt in the wounds was Bryden Carse with the bat as well. Scored a quick 5-14 out from 53 balls just to get Durham all the way up to 391 for 9 on a surface where they'd previously bowled us out for 87 runs. It was brilliant. It was absolutely clinical from Durham. And then, of course, that left us with a massive, massive deficit. And again, Bryden Carse, I mean, shouldn't be surprised at this point. Absolutely brilliant in this game. 5 for 49. Chris Rushworth, we mentioned him every single week here on the podcast, took 3 for 36. And Warwickshire were ultimately bowled out for 177 runs. So, Joe, before I say my piece about Warwickshire, I suppose I have to pass over to you, mate, and get your thoughts on Durham. Just how impressed were you with the North Eastern side in this particular game? How impressed were you with the way in which they conducted themselves with both the bat and the ball in hand?
Yeah, I think Durham's bowling especially really impressed me. I mean, having Mark Wood back is obviously going to help. It's good to see him getting back to full fitness. I actually saw he played a club game 2 weeks ago for a club side in Durham. It was obviously their first 11. And on the opposition was Paul Collingwood. So I actually saw that on Instagram, on Paul Collingwood's Instagram the other week. So I kind of like thought maybe Mark Wood would be back for Durham soon. And obviously this week he was. Ben Rain as well, quality. And, you know, again, in the second innings, Bryden Carse, very, very good. Someone who I think has gone a little bit under the radar. I think he's a good player, Bryden Carse. He's only quite young still. And I think, as I say, I think he's a good player. I think he was in England's 55, wasn't he? I can't remember the term now, but he was in the 55 to go back to training early.
The training squad, yeah.
That's what it's called, yeah. I mean, I think he's a very good player. And as you say, great opening partnership by Lees and Young. We talked about great opening pairs so far this season. I think Lees and Young maybe kick-started something today. This week. Yeah, really, really good. And I bet Liam Norwell will be happy with his second wicket.
Yep, David Beddingham.
David Beddingham, I don't know if he's the second or third wicket, but yeah, David Beddingham for two. Obviously, the man who has got so many runs this season in so little time. Very, very good from him. Very good wicket to get for Liam Norwell. So yeah, but as I say, pretty poor overall, in my opinion, by Warwickshire. I don't think they were very good at all this week.
Yeah, and that's the thing. For me this week, I'm not going to spend a lot of time focusing on Warwickshire. I'm going to be honest, because I'm not going to come on here and rant and rave. Because it's one bad performance in four games. Okay, I don't think myself and many other Warwickshire fans would have expected this start to the season. We are still top. I know it's only by 1 point now as a result of that calamity up at the Riverside, but I don't really think there's that much to really say about Warwickshire. It's just a really, really poor performance. I'm going to be honest, probably the worst showing with a bat I've seen since 2017. And again, it was just a mix of brilliant bowling. And it has to be said, Ben Rain in particular, in that first innings, was just on another level. He didn't bowl a single bad ball. It was just ridiculously good bowling. He bowled an absolute jaffer as well to Tim Bresnan, which sent his off pole absolutely cartwheeling all over the shop. But for me with Warwickshire, I do think that Ollie Stone was a massive, massive miss. I think Dom Sibley as well, he's been a huge loss. Of course, the guy who was our talisman in 2019, 1,244 runs, you can't exactly replace that overnight. And although Rob Yates is a fantastic young opener, he is still inexperienced. And they were very, very tough batting conditions up in Durham this week. So in terms of Warwickshire, there isn't really tons to talk about. The only thing that I will say is that I'm not entirely convinced about our batting lineup. That's all I will say. Peter Milan apparently is meant to be back for the derby this week, so that'll be a massive, massive boost. But I don't mean in terms of personnel. I mean in terms of the batting lineup itself. I just think the balance isn't quite there just yet. And I think if Peter Milan comes in, ideally, Joan, you can obviously rebut this, but I'd want to go with Milan and Rhodes opening up the top of the order. I'd want Rob Yates at 3, Sam Hain at 4, Matt Lam at 5, and then I'd want Hanuma Vihari at 6. Now, that seems very, very low for Vihari, but for those who've seen him in Ranji Trophy cricket, for those who've seen him for India as well, in the Australia series, he bats at 5 and 6 in international cricket. So 3 for me is far too high. I know, obviously, scenarios and circumstances have dictated that with Sibley's injury, but I do want to see Vihari, if possible, if Milan does come back, I want to see him in his natural position in the middle to lower order.
Do you think that Vihari batting at number 3 is something to do with, I mean, you mentioned there because of Sibley obviously being injured, but do you think it's also something to do with the fact that he's your overseas is obviously a test player, and you know you want your overseas to basically bat as high as possible, really. You want to get the most out of him is the best phrase actually to use there. So do you think that's something, maybe that's why?
No.
Because you know, as I say, if you've got someone like Vihari, who's a very, very good cricketer, you know, you're going to want to get the most out of him. Do you not think that's why?
No, because if you're going to get the most out of someone...
Would he be batting?
Well, I've just given you the order. So I'd go Milan, Rhodes,
Sam Hain at four.
It is, and you may have to drop Matt Lam. Matt Lam hasn't had the great start to the season, and that is a shame because Matt Lam is a good batsman. I remember him saving us against Essex in 2019, but the fact is Vihari is not playing in his natural position. So it's all well and good saying you can get the best out of him by putting him up the order, having him face as many deliveries as possible. But let's face it, he's played the majority of his cricket in India itself, and he's had one series in Australia. The ball is not zipping about all over the shop. He's not facing the new ball. He's coming in against change-up bowlers, and he's coming in against spinners. Whereas in England, you're not going to come up against that. When you're batting at 3, and let's face it, with Warwickshire this season, the opening pairing hasn't really lasted for that many deliveries at times. So he's coming in and facing the new ball. It's a completely different kettle of fish to what he's ever faced in his career. And although he does have an excellent average of 56, again, he's done that by building up the runs in the middle order, batting at 5 and 6. So I don't think it's a case of Robinson and Warwickshire wanting to get the most out of him in that sense. I think it's basically circumstances with Dom Sibley's injury have dictated this. And I think once Milan comes into the team, we could potentially have a top 3 of Milan, Rhodes and Yates. Have Hain at 4, potentially put Vihari at 5 or Lam at 5 and then have Vihari at 6. And another thing that I just wanted to mention as well, Joe, and I wanted to ask you this in case it's just me as a Warwickshire fan. Do you think that Michael Burgess should be batting above or below Tim Bresnan?
If I'm honest, I'm not sure because Tim Bresnan, I feel like Tim Bresnan is the kind of person who is great to bat with the tail. Because, I mean, Tim Bresnan is an all-rounder, right? Maybe he wasn't for England, but in county cricket, Tim Bresnan is an all-rounder, right? So for me, look, he got 39 now in the second innings. Was that the highest score? I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So going off scores, that's what I'm judging it off, your best batsman, right? And to have him bat with someone like Briggs, Miles Norwell, Hannah Dolby. So, you know, Bresnan got about 80-odd the other week, batting with the tail, batting at number 7. And for me, that's his best position because he's shown in this innings, 39 of 89. He's obviously playing for the draw, or it's a hard situation to bat in, really, isn't it? So he's trying to basically save the game, but he can also come out and score 39 off 20 if he needs to. So for me, he's a perfect number seven for Warwickshire because, as I say, he's very versatile in his batting sense. So yeah, I think that that's a perfect position to bat with Tim Brisson, because I could have, I've waffled a lot here, but I could have just said that's his, that's the perfect position. But I think he should be batting seven. I don't know about you. I don't know if you have a different opinion.
But it's an interesting
also
one.
I'm not sure if you had someone like Ambrose in this situation, batting six, batting seven, whatever, him and Brisson, maybe things could have gone differently. But yeah, I think Warwickshire needs to find their next Tim Ambrose, really.
Yeah.
Not exactly an easy thing to do, admittedly.
No, big exactly. Well, Ambrose is one of Warwickshire's greatest ever keepers. And of course, maybe we have been a bit fortunate, a bit privileged to have had someone like that over the course of the last decade or so. With me, with regards to the conversation about Brisson and Burgess, I wouldn't mind swapping them around. Because with Burgess, he's a very, very interesting one. For me, it just has not worked at Warwickshire just yet. Because I look at his innings, and he seems to be caught in two minds. So in the first innings, for example, in this game, he went ultra defensive. And he got bowled by a pretty good delivery, it has to be said, by Ben Rain yet again, who, as we keep on mentioning, was unstoppable.
To be fair as well, Ben Rain, I guess in a game like this, you can read into the scorecard, but you have to obviously look at the game as a whole. And Ben Rain got Rhodes out OBW, Vihari out OBW, and bowled Hayne and Burgess.
Well, Haynes was a...
And Brisson.
Well, no, but Haynes, but Haynes was a dodgy leave.
But at the end of the day, though, he still bowled them all. So, okay, so we'll take Haynes out of it then. So he's bowled two and got two LBW, right? So, I guess don't read into into Burgess's dismissal. In my opinion, anyway, I wouldn't read into that too much because you've got to take the whole game into context, in my opinion.
Well, you do, but again, I just think with Burgess... And when we actually originally signed him, I was quite excited. I'm going to be honest, because for Sussex, he was a very, very good talent. He was promising across all three formats. And he's a great wicketkeeper. I can't actually fault him for his keeping. His keeping is brilliant for Warwickshire. But it's just his batting. And again, if I was in Michael Burgess's shoes, which of course I'm not, I'd just go out there and play your natural game. It's as simple as that. I know that particular innings was dictated and we were 30 for 8. I mean, we haven't even mentioned that yet, but we almost collapsed until Norwell and Miles put together a ridiculously good rear guard for the Bears. But in that situation, if Os Burgess, just go out there and play your natural game. I mean, you look at someone like Colin de Grandon, for example, in Test cricket, and I know they aren't comparable, but he goes out there and New Zealand could be 100 for 6 or New Zealand could be 400 for 3. And he'll go out there and play the exact same game. And sometimes it'll pay off, sometimes it won't. But at least he looks in. He looks himself. And that's just what I want to see from Michael Burgess. He's not ultra-defensive. He's not a Dom Sibley. He's not a Chiteshwar Pujara kind player. So I don't want to see that from him. And then at the same time, he's not a Kevin Peterson or a Colin de Grandon. He's a very free-flowing, he's a very natural wicketkeeper batsman.
He's a Michael Burgess. One. You know, he's himself.
Exactly. But he hasn't been himself.
I think a lot of cricket is conforming with others. You know, you look at modern day T20, and maybe that's, not saying that Burgess is doing that consciously, but maybe subconsciously he feels like he has to play this kind of a role to fit in with how modern day number sixes, number sevens play, for example, or modern day keepers play in Red Bull cricket. So yeah, maybe that's something to do with it subconsciously, like I say.
Well, maybe it might be, and again, we won't know, but as I said, I just want Burgess to play his natural game. Because he started doing that in the second innings and he did look very, very good. And then he got out to a bit of an expansive drive. But you know, I'd take an innings like that every day over one of a Dom Sibley-esque innings because he's not Dom Sibley. That's not his natural game. So that's it in terms of Michael Burgess. Hopefully he finds some form. I mean, I wish him the best. As I said, when he first came to Warwickshire, I was really, really excited by the prospect of what he could do in a Warwickshire shirt. It hasn't quite paid off in Red Bull cricket, but... Again, I wish him the best. I hope they does score some runs. But I think that's enough talk about Warwickshire, to be honest. As I said, Joe, an awful performance this week, but just chalk it off. You can't do anything about it. Big match this week with the Derby. Let's get the momentum going again. It's as simple as that. But fair play to Durham. And I have to keep on crediting Durham because they were absolutely lethal. They were lethal. They were brilliant. That is one of the best performances of any county team this season. To have Warwickshire 30 for 8 was exceptional. So fair play to Durham. Well done.
That is remarkable.
Durham fans rejoice as well. First win of the season and in such emphatic fashion. You've got Mark Wood back. You've got Rushworth in great form. Cass. The list goes on and on and on. So fair play to Durham. Wonderful victory. Wonderful performance. And well done to the Northeastern side. That's definitely boosted their hopes of potentially going into Group 1 and Division 1 ahead of the business end of the tournament. But moving on to the third and final game then of Group 1 this week. Unfortunately, this one was a draw, but it was a very, very compelling draw. It has to be said, at New Road between Worcestershire and Essex. Very, very high scoring. And Joe, I want to start with one man in particular, and that is, of course, Sir Alistair Cook. How good and how impressed were you with him this week? Because I was just watching him, and again, this looked like a good, informed, confident, in rhythm Alistair Cook, assured in his defence, and he's just expanding slowly, slowly, slowly as the innings progress, and he's building up an innings to perfection in typical Alistair Cook fashion. How impressed were you with Sheff in this week's game down in Worcester?
No, well, I'll start with Alistair Cook, then I've got another point to make about Essex. But remember how last week when we said he's not really looking himself, he needs runs? Well, 115 off 263. That is proper Alistair Cook innings. I also think massive confidence boost. Not that he's necessarily low on confidence, but still can't do his confidence any harm for Alzari Joseph to get Alistair Cook out. Because, you know, as I say, he's, or as we've said in the past, when he first signed, he's a great player, great, could be one of West Indies' next, you know, great fast bowlers, as we've seen over the years. So, yeah, that's great wicket for Alzari Joseph to get. But yeah, Alistair Cook, really, really impressive performance from him, as you'd really expect. Just classy from Alistair Cook. And how many career hundreds is that now? Off the top of my head, I'll be honest, I don't know. I'm going to quickly check, because he just racks up the runs, doesn't he? He really does. He's so reliable. And as I said, you know, he's not had the best start to the county season. And I think that kind of happens, I guess, is the word I'm looking for there. That happens, doesn't it? You know, that's sport. So, yeah, I mean, brilliant from Sir Alistair Cook. He's now got 68 first-class hundreds and 115 first-class 50s. So I don't think he's going to get to 100 hundreds in first-class cricket because, well, you never know. You never know.
It's Alistair Cook.
that is true. He's 36, so I don't know how many more years he's going to play for. But, I mean, what a player. Phenomenal, phenomenal player. So, yeah, great to see him back getting hundreds. And the other thing I really had to say about Essex was, I also mentioned this last week, was that they were not looking at their best because they were just struggling for runs, really, weren't they, in their middle order? Well, really throughout the whole team. And this week, they've gone and got those runs. So Nick Brown obviously only got 26, but, you know, I'm not expecting everyone to get, you know, high scores. But obviously Cook got 100, Wesley got 100, Lawrence got 90, which is great for his England hopes for this summer with a few players injured. Paul Walter got 65, Ryan Tender-Scott got 41, and then Adam Wheater got 23, and Simon Harmer got 57. So right down to Harmer, Siddle got 11 out and Sneater got one as well. But especially right down to Harmer, everyone has contributed there something. And I always think in red ball cricket, if everyone starts off as a mindset of, well, I'm just going to try and score 30 and go from there. If everyone in the team gets 30, then that's still a good amount of runs, you know? So obviously that's not how the game's going to pan out, but that's a general mindset that I always think could work well in red ball cricket. So I think that's kind of, Essex have hit the nail on the head this week with that.
Yeah, it was a lot more impressive, wasn't it? It was a lot more of a combined
batting
effort.
It was a lot more
effort.
Normal, really.
Yeah, expected. But then I think that would be
an
adjective for Essex this week. As you said, Wesley, absolutely superb as well. Let's not gloss over that. What an innings that was from the number three batsman. Dan Lawrence, of course, Paul Walter as well. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant with the bat from Essex this week. Also, Simon Harmer again in the runs after scoring 82 against us in last week's game. He scored 57 this week, which was brilliant. Really anchored the tail beautifully, as Simon Harmer does in such impressive fashion. And then, of course, Joe, we've spoken there about Alistair Cook, and that has just reminded me of another opener in this particular game, and that is, of course, Jake Libby. There's going to be a lot of chat this season. Jake Libby is one of the best openers in county cricket right now. And Joe, last week I posed you the question about, is he one of the best signings in county cricket in recent memory? I now have another question for you this week. And let's say that you have the choice of selecting Jake Libby. Would you select him? Would you play Jake Libby against New Zealand next month?
God, that's a hard question, isn't it? Alongside who is what I'll first say. Like, I'll be saying Sibley's fit or Sibley not fit. And like, yeah, because if Dom Sibley's fit, then I'll probably still go with Burns and Sibley, if I'm honest. I don't know if Sibley, maybe England just decided to rest Sibley and save him for the India series. I don't know. Let's say Sibley's not fit, then I think it's between him and Hamid for me as to who opens the batting with Rory. Rory Burns is going to open the batting, I think, because obviously he's just got runs again this week. He's starting to find a bit more form now, Rory Burns. So I think he will open the batting. So then it's between Libby and Hamid. And honestly, it's a really good question. Honestly, I couldn't give you one name. So it's a bit of a cop-out answer, but I'll go with Libby or Hamid if Sibley's injured. If not, I'll just stick with Burns and Sibley.
Interesting. I just wanted to put onto the listeners as well then, because we mentioned about Jake Libby, absolutely fantastic last year in the Bob Willis Trophy. And this year, he has made an absolutely storming start to the season. He's been absolutely brilliant yet again for the West Midlands side. So if we're currently looking at top run scorers in this year's tournament, he's actually above Haseeb Hameed, and yet he's played two less innings. So he scored 411 runs in six innings, including two daddy centuries as well, a 180 not out. He's averaging 102.75. But I suppose, Joe, if you are going to play him in place of Sibley, he's got a Sibley-esque strike rate of 41.05. So would you play him? That is the question. And of course, I put that to the listeners as well. If it was up
it's
to me...
It's a hard answer.
It is.
I think maybe we need a poll for that.
Yeah. Hey, maybe for the
maybe
Twitter.
We need a poll for that. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the best way to decide.
Yeah. And it is a tremendously difficult question. Of course it is. But at the same time, maybe you could give it a go. If Sibley is injured, and of course, if Sibley isn't injured, I'd play Dom Sibley. But if Sibley was to be injured, and England need that gritty, steely, resolute opener, someone who can almost just anchor themselves in and allow the rest of the batting order to build around them, maybe we could see Jake Libby in an England shirt. Who knows? We could see Jake Libby in an England shirt in June. We'll have to wait and see, of course, very, very early, maybe a bit too early to say. And of course, we do wish Dom Sibley the best of luck with his recovery. But in terms of just another Worcestershire player who really impressed me this week was Brett D'Oliveira. I thought he was very, very good with the ball. Took figures of 3 for 147 from his 46 overs in the first innings, and only innings, I suppose, for Essex. And then scored a pretty handy 67 from 150 balls in the second innings. So overall, Joe, I think that was a pretty compelling match, wasn't it? I know it was obviously a draw. Both sides have looked very, very competitive, though, with each other this season. That's now two draws of those two games. But I suppose we have to move on now from Essex, Worcestershire and Group 1 and go on to Group 2, because Group 2 was incredibly, incredibly good this week. And I suppose, Joe, we have to start down at the Oval for what was arguably the surprise result of Group 2 this week. And that was Surrey annihilating Hampshire by an innings and 289 runs at the Oval. What did you make of this game? And I know one man in particular we're going to talk about at length is Hashim Amla. But Joe, first of all, did you expect this result in terms of the actual one-sided nature of the game itself? And second of all, just how impressed were you with Hashim Amla this week?
I mean, firstly, Hashim Amla. So again, remember how last week I said Hashim Amla needs to start scoring runs?
Yeah,
there you go. Scored a
double
100.
Here on the pod.
it is a pattern, yeah. So also, he retired hurt, so hopefully he's okay. I'm not sure what he's done. Hopefully he's okay. So yeah, great classic Hashim Amla, really. And I saw it on Twitter that he's going to still be playing domestic cricket in South Africa next year. Mm-hmm. So I bet South African fans can't believe their luck. Getting to see Hashim Amla again out in South Africa. So yeah, what a player. I think in terms of the Proteas as well, you can really tell the difference now that he's not there, obviously, anymore. Mm-hmm. Similar with AB de Villiers not being there in their national size either. So yeah, I think, again, Hashim Amla shows his class. Ollie Pope, another 100. He's in great nick. And more runs for Jamie Smith as well. He's certainly playing very well. And again, the other person Rory Burns, as I already mentioned before, more runs. So yeah, good to see. Hopefully he's getting back to his old self. But the one person who I would like to mention, you're probably going to guess who it is, with the ball for Surrey, and that is Jordan Clark. I'm telling you, right now, Jordan Clark is the best all-rounder in the country. Not saying he should be in the England team, but on form, right now,
over Matt Critchley,
seeming all-rounder.
Over Darren Stevens.
Bowler. Yeah. he's bowling so well. 10 overs, 6 for 21 in the first innings against Hampshire, who, well, Weatherly has been out of form. Holland's getting, well, I think so, 200s a year. Allsop has scored 100 this year. North East has been about our nick. James Vince is class. Liam Dawson's got a load of runs this year. Lewis McManus has chipped in with a few runs, as he did in the first innings. So, brilliant from Jordan Clark. Really, really good to see. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say. Just really good to see Jordan Clark getting those wickets.
Yeah, I knew Jordan Clark would come up. But of course, I'm just going to just take us back a little bit, Joe. I'm going to dissect this innings by innings if I can. And I suppose we have to start with Hashim Amla, because you mentioned about the hole that he's left, the gaping hole that he's left in the Proteas international starting 11. But my goodness, this was just a glimpse into what made Hashim Amla one of South Africa's finest ever cricketers. And I actually wrote a column. I wrote a piece for Cricket Fanatics magazine, which is a South African publication, about this particular innings. And this is how I described it. I described this as a massively crafted red ball innings, characterised by sheer class, unwavering patience, and an ice-cold temperament, combined with an eclectic mix of poise, precision, and pure, unrefined elegance that had previously immortalised his place in the hallowed halls of South African cricketing history for millennia to come. And if that does not...
Out there, didn't you?
Yeah, I know, yeah. Got the repertoire, the vocabulary out in full force. But it was just brilliant. It was champagne cricket, Joe. It really was. Every single minute of the crease was a moment. It was an occasion watching a master at his craft. And I suppose we talk about the master. And at the other end was his English apprentice, Ollie Pope, who we all know the sheer class of this guy, that incredible knock against Leicestershire earlier this season at the Oval. And again, he just complimented Hashim Amla so well. They shared a brilliant 257-run stand. And again with Surrey, when they do bat like this, they are one of the best teams in the country, aren't they? But it's just about finding that consistent plane. It's not about being world beaters one week and then terrible the next. They have to find that middle ground, which I don't think they've found just yet this season.
Even if they draw games, then that's fine. It's better than, obviously better than losing. So, like I say, they've just got to find the middle ground.
The middle ground.
Copied what you said there.
Well, exactly. And that is what they need to do in order to be successful. But this is a massive, massive performance for Surrey. And it's a sign of the dominance that they can actually produce in county cricket. And someone who I'm surprised you didn't mention, Joe, and again, keeping in form with the people that you've mentioned on this podcast who then perform well next week, is Kemar Roach. Key marvellous Roach this week. 8 for 40 in the second innings. Career best first class figures. How impressed were you with Kemar Roach, Joe? Because I know we spoke last week about his first couple of games and maybe the wickets column wasn't necessarily reflecting just how good Kemar Roach had been bowling. But you can't say that this week. 8 for 40, 10 wickets in the match. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. What did you make of Kemar Roach's performance, Joe?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, I mentioned Kemar Roach. As you say, I pretty much called him out last week, didn't I, saying he needs to step up. As I have done with a lot of the Surrey team, in fact, a lot of the county players. So, I think pretty incredible from Kemar Roach. That shows, I said this last week, how many test wickets he's got, and I've already forgot. It's 200, isn't it? That's how many he's now got. And I think this shows why. You know, in this innings, he dismissed Holland, Allsop, North East, Dawson, McManus, Curry, Abbott, and Weil. Now, Weil, Curry, Abbott, they're tail-enders, so forget about them, really. But, you know, dismissing McManus, Dawson, North East, Allsop and Holland, I said it when we talked about Jordan Clark, some of those are seriously impressive scalps. Mm-hmm. It's just unfortunate he didn't get James Vince out. But, yeah, I mean, very, very, very impressive from Kemar Roach. And, again, showing why he is deserved of 200 test wickets. Because for me, he is.
Yeah.
I feel like, obviously, he had those injury problems when he was younger, but for me, Kemar Roach is a very good bowler. And I always thought it was a great signing for Surrey. I've just thought, you know, Kemar needs to step up really and, perform. And he has done. So, yeah, pretty good from Kemar Roach.
And in some fashion as well. Let's not forget, 840 career best figures. And let's face it, the Oval this season so far hasn't necessarily been that bowler friendly, as displayed by Surrey's incredible performance in their first and only innings. So to get 840.
Against Leicester.
Yeah, exactly. Against Leicester. 100%. So, another very high-scoring draw.
100%, yeah, 100%.
So, yeah, Kemar Roach, brilliant. Jordan Clark, Outstanding. And I know, Joe, you'll be very, very happy and pleased about that. But I suppose Surrey aside, because Surrey were just brilliant this week. They were so clinical, so ruthless, a bit like Durham. And both sides this week, I think, were the standouts in their respective games. But let's move on a little bit to Hampshire, because, again, a bit like Warwickshire, I don't think we need to massively focus on Hampshire this week, purely because they've had an excellent start to the season. And this just seems to be a bit of a blip. They've had their stinker of the season right now. I don't think it's really going to affect them, I'm going to be honest. You look at the informed guys, the Hollands, the Allsops, the James Vinces, Northeast, as well as starting to score some runs as well. Dawson's been racking up the runs for fun this season. I don't necessarily think that this is going to derail Hampshire's hopes, but it was a little bit of a blip, wasn't it? Let's face it, they collapsed from 37 for one to 92 all out. And fair enough, that was catalysed by some extraordinary bowling courtesy of Jordan Clark. But the only thing that I will say, for Hampshire, of course, it's not a performance to remember. It's one that you're not going to look back on fondly. But there is one guy who I just wanted to give a quick mention to. And Joe, funnily enough, he has a similar haircut to you. and that's Scott Curry. Scott Curry this week was absolutely brilliant. 4 for 109. And not only that, the way in which he was bowling, he just offered something completely different for Hampshire. Good pace, tall, decent bit of zip as well. He was getting some really good carry through to McManus behind the stumps. And his 4 for 109 really just injected some life into Hampshire's bowling attack. So yeah, he could be an exciting talent to watch out for heading into the rest of this season and of course beyond. But it just was not Hampshire's week, was it?
No, it wasn't. And yeah, Surrey will be extremely pleased with that performance, considering realistically, they've actually been poor this season. And I know if he's listening, Shay from Uneven Bounce will be buzzing with that as well.
He was.
I don't think he'll need any to find any expletives to describe that performance. Maybe only in a positive way. So.
Brilliant. Yeah, but it
quick
was
shout out there to Shay.
Yeah, from Uneven Bounce. Quick shout out to Shay. But it was an excellent, excellent performance from Surrey. Clinical, ruthless, but again, learn from this, learn the lessons. You're not necessarily going to be able to replicate this week in, week out. That's just not achievable in county cricket, given the demanding nature of this tournament. But even if you can just replicate that to some extent every single week, and you're going to be successful in this league. It's as simple as that. So Surrey, well done. And again, for Hampshire fans, don't get carried away. I didn't with Warwickshire this week. Again, you just got to think maybe it's a little bit of a lapse in concentration, one poor performance, and then you just got to be at it next week and get back into the swing of things. But Joe, moving on from Surrey versus Hampshire then, let's go down to Bristol, because this was such a good game. This was such a good game. And if not for another ridiculously tight game in Group 3, which we'll touch upon in due course, I would have said this was actually the standout game of this entire round. And this was Gloucestershire beating Leicestershire by 4 wickets in Bristol. Now, before we actually talk about this game, just preceding this as well, we have to mention last week, Joe, we mentioned about Sam Evans. He wasn't dropped. He actually had an injury, so thank you to Leicestershire boys for letting us.
I was going to say, Sam Evans, like, if you get dropped, that is ridiculous. And yeah. There's why. You shouldn't have got dropped.
Well, exactly. And he wasn't. He was injured. So thank you very much to Dan Weston from Leicestershire for actually telling us about that and informing us. And the reason why I mention that is because in this game, Sam Evans scored another century. Like, how impressive has he been, Joe? How impressed are you with Sam Evans this season? Because he had that fantastic knock at the Oval. And now he's continuing to find some form. This is now his second century in the space of 2 games. How impressed are you with Sam Evans' start to the season?
I think, again, I was kind of unsure. I mentioned this a little bit last week. I was kind of unsure when the Foxes signed Marcus Harris. Sorry, when they signed Rian Mulder, that they needed that middle order batter, that kind of all-rounder. Clearly they have done in recent weeks, but I was obviously wrong on that. But at the start of the season, I wasn't really sure. But yeah, I mean, then I kind of changed my mind again and thought, maybe they do need that kind of owner, like Marcus Harris, for example. Obviously, that's who I didn't name him, but that's obviously who they signed. He obviously ended up batting 3 this game, and I kind of changed my mind again, and now I think Leicester need a bowler. So I can't really make my mind up, but Sam Evans has really, really proven himself this last 2 weeks. Obviously, it's gutting for him to miss out with an injury last week. So, against a really good Gloucestershire bowling attack as well. Warrell, very, very good bowler. Dan Warrell got a 5 for. He's not express, but he's very kind of like, balls a heavy line and length, doesn't he? He's one of those kind of bowlers. Ryan Higgins, obviously, very, very good bowler as well. So against two quality opening bowlers. So they're going to score 102 off 263. Very slow, very, very slow. But look, at the end of the day, he's done exactly what he needed to do. And he's proving why right now he should be opening the batting for Leicester. And I also quite like Marcus Harris at number three. I actually do quite. I mean, he's obviously never going to play there for Australia because Australia have Marnus, who we'll talk about obviously in a bit. But I do quite like Marcus Harris at three. I think he's quite he makes quite a good number three. So I think, look, I think Sam Evans is going about it the right way. And, you know, he's only young. He's only young. So he's got years to grow and develop and learn. And he's only scored two centuries, but that's fine because, as I say, he's only young. So, you know, we'll look maybe in 5 years' time, maybe he will have scored 10 centuries, maybe he will have only scored three, but I don't think that'll be the case. But as I say, he's very young, he's got a lot of time to develop. And I think, especially having someone like Azad as well, who's kind of in a similar boat to him, but he's obviously a little bit older in terms of he's come from kind of out of nowhere, Hassan Azad, really, didn't he? He was on County's books, but he never really, you know, managed to secure a place. So, I think both of those two are good opening pairs, although Azad obviously didn't, unfortunately, get many runs this week. I do think they make a good opening pair.
They do indeed. And of course, we'll touch more about Leicestershire in due course, Joe, but I suppose we just have to talk about Gloucestershire, because how impressive have they been this season? They have been the standout team for me. To have won three and drawn one so far, they've got 10 batting bonus points, 8 bowling bonus points. They are 14 points clear of any other team in the group of death. I don't think anyone was really expecting this. I think people were expecting Somerset, Hampshire, Surrey to be dominating. And yet the glorious Gloucestershire are there at the top. They're battling. They are fighting week in, week out. And this week was no different. And this is the thing which I think has really differentiated Gloucestershire from any other team in county cricket so far, is that fighting spirit. I think back to last week and that incredible great escape between Josh Shaw and Dom Goodman. That was incredible. That showed a lot of heart, a lot of valour, a lot of courage. You, of course, had the win against Somerset. You had the win against Surrey as well. It's been an incredibly impressive start to the season. And then again, we talk about fight, tenacity, resilience and resolve. In their first innings, Gloucestershire slipped 121 for 6 within the first 33 overs. And with all due respect, that was because of an extraordinary 7 for 53, courtesy of Chris Wright. And then you have an incredibly invaluable rearguard action from George Hankins. He scores 37. Tom Smith scores 47, not out. And then the architect of last week's great escape, Josh Shaw, also scored 41. It was an incredibly, incredibly impressive rearguard from Gloucestershire. That got them up to a very, very competitive total of 275 runs in the 79th over of their innings. And then it was just brilliant from there on out. Gloucestershire, who for the first two, potentially 3 days of this game, probably looked to be on the back foot. And then on comes day four. And day four was absolutely blockbuster. It was blockbuster action from start to finish. So with regards to this, again, Gloucestershire were struggling. They were motoring along, then they had a little bit of a collapse. And then Ian Cobain comes in and scores his first county championship century since 2014, when he scored a century against Surrey in Bristol itself. And he produced a glorious 117 from 179 balls, which included 10 fours and 4 sixes, in a match-defining 224-run partnership alongside Tom Lace, who again was incredibly impressive this week with a score of 97. And those two just complemented each other so perfectly, took the attack to the Leicestershire bowlers in fantastic fashion. And then just to top it all off, Ryan Higgins as well, who had earlier taken 5 for 62 in Leicestershire's second innings, also blasted a quick fire 33 from 25 balls to help propel Gloss to their 348-run target. What a game this was. What a game this was. A fantastic victory for Gloucestershire, who continue along like a runaway freight train in county cricket this season. They've just been absolutely sensational. They really have. And again, Joe, I wanted to ask you this question. What do you think has been the most impressive aspect of Gloucestershire this year? Because I mentioned about they've got pretty similar batting and bowling bonus points. We spoke about the strength of their bowling, the likes of Ryan Higgins, Frankie Worrell, David Payne, Josh Shaw, George Hankins, Tom Smith as well this week. And then they have an excellent top order with the likes of Chris Dent, James Bracey, Craig Brathwaite, Ian Cobain slotting into the order, Tom Lace as well now in the runs. What do you think is the root of Gloucestershire's success this season? What do you think is the underlying cause of this resurgence in cricket down in Bristol?
I honestly think their bowling has been a massive part of their resurgence, really. I mean, their batting has been really good. I think this week, probably a little bit inconsistent, to be honest.
At times.
Their tail kind of saved them. Their tail pretty much basically saved them. I know Hankins isn't really a tail ender, but still 37. Smith got 47. Worrell, 11. So kind of discount that. And Shaw, 41. So, you know, their tail kind of got a lot of their runs. But, I think their bowling has been massively impressive. To bowl Leicester out, they didn't bowl them out, but they took 19 wickets in the match. I think they've been very impressive. I think, you know, Tom Lace, for example, let's take him as an example. He's had a bit of a tricky career, really. He's obviously been at Middlesex, couldn't really break through. I think he grew up in the same kind of age as Max Holden. I think that kind of age. So grew up through the ranks with the likes of Max Holden. Obviously went on loan to Derby for a bit. It didn't really work out for him. He's come into Gloucester side and he seems to have really found his feet there. Obviously 97 this week. Ian Cobain obviously getting 100. I think, as I said, the batting, certainly in the first innings, was inconsistent. In the second innings was a lot more consistent. I think, for me, their bowling has just totally changed this team, totally transformed his team. One thing I will say is, back onto Leicester quickly while I'm thinking about it. Last week, Callum Parkinson has been struggling for wickets. Well, this week, he got 3 in the second innings and 2 in the first innings. So, yeah, I know, a little bit expensive, really. 3.46 and over he went for in the first innings and 3.58 and over in the second. But he's taken 5 wickets in a match. So he's kind of, hopefully for Callum Parkinson now, he's kind of starting to find his form again.
Of course, and Joe, actually, I'm glad you brought up Leicester because, of course, we do have to mention the Running Foxes. I said we would come back onto them. Before we talk about the bowling, because I do have quite a profound question ahead of the rest of this season, but with regards to their batting as well, Lewis Hill, I know we touched upon it, but he has had a fantastic start to the season, really has. Currently, Leicestershire's leading run score with 481 runs in 8 innings at a mightily impressive average of 68.71. He's been brilliant with the gloves. He's been brilliant as a batsman. And again, this week was no different. That was a brilliant 121, which included 15 fours and a 6. So I know that's very much a Joe Nuttall kind of innings. Lewis Hill, very, very impressive. And again, I don't think the batting necessarily is Leicestershire's problem this season. It has been the bowling, hasn't it? And in this game, they have suffered a big injury. And that is Dieter Klein. Now, I'm not sure how long Dieter Klein is actually out for. Again, we may have to wait on an update from Leicestershire itself. But Joe, let's say that Dieter Klein was out for another few games. Do you think Leicestershire run the risk of over-relying on Chris Wright? Because in this game, 7 for 53 pretty much carried Leicestershire's bowling in Gloucester's first innings. He's currently their leading wicket taker. He's the only Leicestershire bowler in double digits this season with 12 wickets, an average of 33.66. And I look at the rest of their bowlers. Ben Mike has 6. Callum Parkinson now has 9, but he's got an average of 63.77. Gavin Griffiths has 4. And the man who I've just mentioned, Dieter Klein, also had 4. But again, he's experienced. That is now a potential loss of experience. Do you think that Leicestershire this season could run into a bit of problems if they do over-rely on Chris Wright, who, let's face it, is in his late 30s? Do you think that Leicestershire do run the risk of maybe over-relying on the veteran seamer?
Yeah, but I think regardless, they're always going to take that risk. I guess with any fast bowler, certainly someone who's a bit older, you're going to take that risk. Look at England with Jimmy Anderson. Again, true. Totally different comparison because it's Jimmy, but he's constantly injured now. Not to say Chris Wright's not a good bowler, but
2012 Chris Wright, he was up there.
but Jimmy's been, he constantly gets injured now, doesn't he, Jimmy? So I guess like, it's always a risk that they're going to end up taking with using any fast bowler, really. So maybe they should kind of, again, bring someone through from the academy is maybe something that they could look at doing. But as I say, they're always going to end up taking that risk. That's something that's always going to happen. So maybe they should just go with it at the end of the day and hope nothing happens, because he is their leading seamer now. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. He's their most experienced leading seamer. So, yeah, maybe they should just go with that and see what happens, really. And look, at the end of the day, if he gets injured, that's life. So you can't predict the future. You might not get injured. You can't predict the future. So I guess they should see what happens.
Yeah, I agree, Joe. But the only thing that I will say with Leicester, I hope that this bowling issue can be resolved. Also, I think that Ed Barnes could potentially also be on his way back to full fitness, which would be interesting. So we'll have to wait and see with regards to that, whether or not he can come back into the squad. But yeah, interesting times to say the least at Leicester. But yeah, not the most ideal of performances. I think Running Foxes fans will be disappointed this week. But then at the same time, again, credit to Gloucestershire and in particular to Ian Cobain, who was, funnily enough, our last guest here on TCCP. And literally the next game, 5 days after we did our recording with Ian Cobain, scores a glorious century. So to Ian, well done on behalf of us two here at TCCP. And to Gloucestershire fans as well, rejoice. The fact is the team is doing brilliantly. Keep up the support. Hopefully Gloucestershire can maintain this momentum. And yeah, it's got all the makings of being a very, very promising season for the southwestern side. Moving on to our final game then of Group 2 for this week, let's go to Gloucestershire's southwestern rival Somerset, because the Wyverns continued their impressive start to the season with a fantastic 4-wicket victory over Middlesex in Taunton. So Joe, before we talk about each of the individual talking points and key moments from this game, what did you make of the game itself? Just how good of a fixture was this game between the two sides?
I think last week I highlighted this game as maybe one to watch, I think, if I'm correct. And I tell you, it was a good game. It was close. I think Middlesex will be very disappointed, though, with their second innings. You know, there was not really... Compared to their first, where, you know, Robbie White got 92, Simpson got 33, Anderson got 38, that kind of like lower to middle order, and Holman got 16 as well. That kind of like lower to middle order, you know, scored runs. They didn't really do that, and that's where they lost the game for me. Obviously, the top order they're relying on a lot, as every team does, but regardless, that's where they'll be disappointed, because they didn't really offer much resistance, in my opinion. I think Peter Hanscom as well, I mentioned that they need that experienced kind of player back in the middle order as well. I think, obviously, it's his first game back, Peter Hanscom, so second. I don't think you can really... Second game? Oh, well, okay. It's obviously only his second game, so I don't really think you can read into his runs too much. You need kind of time to bed into a team and, what's the word? Acclimatise, that's a word, isn't it? Yeah. You really need to acclimatise. As I said, I think they'll be really disappointed. But Somerset, again, you know, solid from them. I don't think their batting was quite there, but I go back to my point that I said about Essex, is if every player roughly gets 30, then it'll work out well. And that's... you know, on average, that's pretty much what happens. So one thing I will say is Tom Banton, it's not really working for him at the top of the order, is it? It's not really working for him.
Yeah, but so now you've said that, he'll score a century next week.
Well, there you go. I hope he finds one, because as I say, I would like to see him do well at the top of the order. But to be fair, Tim Murty got him out twice. So, you know, I guess you can't really argue much. Tim Murty is a very, very good bowler.
Oh, yeah, he is. He's a legend of county cricket. I don't know anyone who does not like Tim Murty. He's an absolute hero. But, Joe, I suppose before we talk about the game itself as well and maybe some of the key moments, I just wanted to touch upon one player in particular and ask you this question, and that is Craig Overton, who in this game, incredibly impressive, in particular in that second innings. You mentioned about Middlesex collapsing to 117 all out. And Craig Overton took 5 for 34 in this game. He's in the wickets yet again. He's currently the leading wicket taker in county cricket in 2021 with 25 wickets, an average of 14.6. So my question to you, Joe, as I mentioned with Jake Libby earlier, should Craig Overton be playing in that first test of the summer? When you think that England may be without Ben Stokes, who has an injury, Craig Overton can bat a little bit. Do you think that Overton should be in there? Or if not, who do you think could slot in maybe ahead of him? What do you think the pecking order is with those England seamers at the moment?
I think Ollie Robinson is probably above Craig Overton in the pecking order. I feel like, obviously, Robinson has never had a chance at test level, but I feel like Overton has been tried and tested. It's not really worked out for him. I mean, he's done okay, but he's not come on to... I think when he played at Old Trafford in that test against Australia, I don't really know what Australia were expecting, but what I gathered from watching the test, obviously the Amazon Prime documentary, not the actual test match, well, and the actual test match, but I'm talking about the Amazon Prime documentary, is that Australia didn't really They didn't really think he was anything special at a test level. So, I mean, that was obviously 2 years ago. So maybe he's kind of come and gone away and worked on that. But I think it's time for Ollie. If anyone's going to get a chance, if any seamer is going to get a chance, I think the two who I would look at are Ollie Robinson and Saki Mahmood. For me, they're the two who Robinson fits the swing category, the typical English seamer kind of category, although he's still a good pace, but that's the kind of category that he fits in. And I would say that Mahmood kind of fits the Wood, Jofra, Stone, obviously Mahmood as well. But I think those four are England's four genuine fast bowlers. So it will be interesting to see kind of how it goes for England and who they pick. But as I say, I would probably say Ollie Robinson for me just edges out Overton. But Overton is absolutely up there.
Well, he is. And this is the thing with Craig Overton. If we are going to pick based off of domestic form, Craig Overton is the man, surely. He was up there in the wickets last year in the Bob Willis Trophy. Took wickets for fun alongside his partner in crime, Josh Davey, who, again, incredibly impressive so far this season and in this particular game down in Taunton. But the fact is, Craig Overton takes wickets for fun week in, week out. Why not give him a chance? I know that you mentioned about the Ashes test against Australia, but again, fourth test, he was just in there for a one-off game in place of Chris Wokes, wasn't he, for that one? Because I think Wokes was...
there you go. There's another person, Chris Wokes.
Of course,
he's done nothing wrong. I would rather Chris Wokes than Overton or Robinson, personally. Maybe some bowlers are just not suited to test level, and that's okay. That's fine. They've been
that's
tried
bold.
And tested. I'm not saying that.
Somerset
that's the
case, fans listening in may be disagreeing, Joe.
I'm not 100%. I'm not at all saying Overton is not ever going to make it as a test cricketer, but we've seen loads of people for every country who have played test cricket. Maybe less so Ireland and Afghanistan because they're newer to test cricket, but certainly the other major nations of test cricket. Try and test people. Australia have done it loads. India have done it loads. Pakistan have done it loads. So many teams tried these people, tested them. They don't actually work at test level. They're just a great domestic bowler. And as I say, I'm not saying that's Overton at all. I personally am a massive fan of Craig Overton. I think he's a great cricketer. But at the end of the day, it might be something that comes down to that. Or maybe Chris Silverwood will actually back Overton. Maybe he sees himself in Overton or something along those lines. Maybe he will back him and put him in. Personally, for me, I would rather see Wokes and then Robinson. Actually, and also Sam Curran, but I think he will play anyway. So, yeah, I think I guess the good thing about this is England have options.
Exactly. Not That's what I was going to come on to.
If you think back to 2014, 2015, just after Strauss retired, that kind of era, England, Broad and Anderson got injured, England were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
If Broad and Anderson get injured now, it's obviously not ideal, but they have Robinson, Overton, Curran,
Stone, Wood,
Stone, Wokes, Wood, Mahmood, Jofra, all these bowlers can come into the side.
Interesting. And of course, again, it's good that England have options, but it is a bit of a selection headache, isn't it, at the end of the day? We've got all of these different seamers, a lot of them in great form as well. Let's face it, we aren't just basing this off reputation alone. These guys are all in excellent form. They've been outstanding so far this season. Overton is no different. And then with regards to Middlesex, the batting, yes, wasn't there this week, but I'll tell you what, some of the bowling on display, I do like this Middlesex attack. And in particular, Stephen Finn, brilliant in the first innings, 5 for 77, put Somerset on the back foot. And then Tim Murta, absolutely brilliant. He's one of my absolute favourite bowlers in county cricket, 4 for 53, absolutely outstanding. Also, Joe, before we do move on, though, I just wanted to mention one final guy, and that is Somerset's debutant, and that is Lewis Goldsworthy. Because in this game, he's making his debut. He's from Cornwall, has a real massive affinity and connection to Somerset. And he actually scored the winning runs. He scored the winning runs off of the bowling of Luke Holman. So just wanted to give Lewis Goldsworthy a massive, massive shout out for an excellent debut. Big moment, must have been a very momentous occasion for the young man. And he scored a brilliant 41 out as well. So fair play to Lewis Goldsworthy. Absolutely fantastic debut. And hopefully this is the start of a successful tenure and career down in Taunton. But moving on from Group 2 then, Joe, let's go into Group 3. And Group 3 this week was absolutely mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. This may actually be the longest segment of this week's entire podcast because all three games were just brilliant. End-to-end, non-stop, thrilling, heart-pounding, nerve-wracking, nail-biting, county championship cricket at its very best. To all of the listeners out there, watch county cricket. And group three is a testament as to why you should. This was outstanding. This was Red Bull cricket at its very best. It really was. And I suppose there's only one place that we can actually start with this week. I know Joe's a Lancs fan. You may not be too happy about this, but I suppose we have to start with Yorkshire versus Northants, because this was an incredible game. And again, we talk about trivia. There is some incredible stats and figures from this particular game. Now, as we mentioned right at the start of the show, this was determined by one run. This game came down right down to the wire until Stephen Patterson dismissed Wayne Parnell with an absolute jaffer around the wicket. Good length, made Wayne Parnell play. It just kissed the edge of Parnell's blade. And then Johnny Tattersall behind the stumps gobbles it up. And there's just scenes of massive celebration. I'd imagine that those celebrations were echoed all around Yorkshire itself. And then straight after the game as well, and this is why we love county cricket and cricket in general, just the camaraderie, the sportsmanship. Yorkshire going absolutely berserk. They've just won this game by one run. And then straight afterwards, after the celebrations have died down, the initial excitement and jubilance, everyone starts shaking hands with Wayne Parnell, just consoling him, saying, well played, mate. And that is what we want to see in county cricket. So fair play to Yorkshire and fair play to Northants, because it wasn't just a great game off the pitch, but also the way in which it was played, the spirits and the manner of the cricket being played was also outstanding. So fair play to both sides. But with regards to the trivia surrounding this game, this is the first time in Northamptonshire's 116-year history that they have ever lost a game by one run in the county championship. The last time a county championship before this game was decided by one run was in 1995 when Middlesex beat Leicestershire. And in terms of Yorkshire, this was only the second time in their entire first-class history that they had won a game by one single run after beating Middlesex in the 1976 County Championship by a single run. Joe, what did you make of this game? This, to me, as I said earlier, was the standout game of the season, arguably. One run, this came down right to the wire, and Stephen Patterson absolutely clutched it with a beautiful delivery to Wayne Parnell. What did you make of this game, and just how exciting and exhilarating was it for you? I suppose maybe as a neutral, or were you supporting Northants in this game? As a
Lancer? I'm always supporting Northants. I'm always supporting the opposite team who you're actually playing. I think for me, I was slightly disappointed that it didn't end in a tie, because I think that would have been pretty incredible, because you never ever get tests, Red Bull games, whatever, ending in, well, obviously you do at times, but you rarely ever get them ending in a tie. So I think that would have been a bit more exciting for me. But regardless, one run victory. How could that not be more exciting? A tie is way more exciting than a one run victory. I mean, for Yorkshire, it's obviously better, but for neutrals, I think a tie would have been way more exciting. I really do. But to be fair to Yorkshire, they had no Joe Root.
Yeah, it's been rotated this week.
Yeah, they had no Joe Root. So to still score without England's probably best player, him and Ben Stokes, but England's best out-and-out batter, you know, they didn't score masses of runs, but on a fairly low-scoring game where they could have easily got skittled for 100, they still did well. So, yeah, I think Yorkshire have to be pleased with the way that they played. I mean, obviously that they won, but I mean, in general, with the batting more. And Northants, so close. It's devastating for Northants. But, you know, maybe I'm being a bit picky there, asking for it to be a tie. But still, regardless, still a thrilling game. Still a thrilling game.
It was. And you know what? Again, you have to credit both sides. Northants put up such a good fight. And in particular, Wayne Parnell. He's been a fantastic signing. He really has. And I know when we mentioned his name in an earlier podcast, Joe, we mentioned about his white ball acumen and just how good he's been for Worcestershire, for example, in T20 cricket. But we didn't quite expect him to have this much of an impact on the Red Bull side straight away. He's been an absolute revelation. Now, so far this season, in just two games, bear in mind, Wayne Parnell has taken 13 wickets, Joe. He's taken 13 wickets at 21.76. Fair enough, the economy rate of 4.15 does need to come down a little bit. But in this game, again, at 10 for 143 were his match figures. He was an absolute menace. And again, he has just transformed this Northants bowling attack alongside the likes of Ben Sanderson, for example, alongside the likes of Nathan Buck, Tom Taylor, Safe Zabe, Gareth Berg. Northants' bowling attack are a very, very good unit now. And Wayne Parnell has just added to that. And in this game as well, of course, with the bats, mentioned about him getting out, but the actual rear guard that he put up alongside his fellow tail enders was admirable. And it took a beautiful piece of bowling, courtesy of Mr. Reliable, Stephen Patterson, to actually remove him. And it was just a great game. I know I sound a little bit, what to say, Joe. I do sound as though I'm really bigging up this game quite a bit.
You sound like a Northlands fan or a Yorkshire fan.
Yeah, I know. But again, this is just county cricket at its utmost best, because
it was a remarkable game.
I can't imagine how this would have felt, because your heart would just be pounding, whether you're a Northlands fan or a Yorkshire fan. Of course, the batsmen and bowlers out there as well in the field. And it was just so, so good. And again, in this game, it was just roller coaster, non-stop after non-stop action.
Yeah.
And the fact that we had Dom Best in the first innings as well, we haven't actually mentioned him, but his 56 from 95 deliveries arguably saved this game for Yorkshire, because then it comes into the second innings and you've got guys
that's
like...
What I mean, Yorkshire needed someone to stand up and score the runs that Root obviously couldn't get because he wasn't in the team. So fair play to Best, scored the runs.
Exactly. And then in their second innings as well, the tail enders coming into the forefront yet again. Yorkshire were 149 for 8 in their second innings. And then David Willey scores 41. Jordan Thompson scores 37. Duane Olivier scores 11 as the number 11 batsman. And suddenly Yorkshire go from 149 for 8 to 247 all out. So again, this is what made this game so compelling, so interesting. The level of bowling, we've mentioned the Northants attack, but the likes of Patterson, Willey, Thompson, Duane Olivier, Dom Best, the level of bowling and the sheer quality of bowling in this game was absolutely exceptional, in particular with the new ball. And then we had the tail end action, the rear guard from these guys from number 8 to 11 on both sides. And it just made for such a gripping encounter. It was blockbuster viewing. It really was. So fair play to both sides. Have to mention a special mention as well to Stephen Patterson. Outstanding. Came through in the clutch. Got Yorkshire that incredibly impressive win. What a game. What a game of county championship cricket. Joe, I don't really think there's much more to add to that. We keep on mentioning adjectives. We could keep on throwing superlatives at it until the cows come home and until there's no words left in the English dictionary. But what a game of cricket. Brilliant, brilliant game of cricket. But Joe, moving on then, which game would you like to go to next? Do you want to go to Lancs or go to Kent?
We'll save Lancs the last. We'll save Lancs the last. We never do Lancs last, so we'll save it.
Fair enough. Let's go to Glamorgan then, Joe. Let's go to Sophia Gardens. And I know there'll be one man in particular who you want to talk about in this game. And we go to Sophia Gardens because Glamorgan produced an incredible 10-wicket annihilation of Kent down in Cardiff. So, Joe, before we talk about the game itself, how good was it for you? I'll say as a neutral, but I know you're a massive Marnus Labuschagne fan. You like your Australian cricket. How good was it to see Marnus back in action for the Welsh side?
It was really good to see him back in county cricket. Unfortunately, two things. Firstly, unfortunately, he didn't get any runs. And also, unfortunately, Lancs playing next week. In the next game. So, this week, I suppose, actually, isn't it? So, if he finds form, then... it's not the best time to do so, but it's just great to see Marnus back in county cricket, as you say. And I guess it can only help Glamorgan as well. I mean, they obviously won this game. Obviously, he didn't get many runs, which was a shame. But this was another low-scoring game. We'll obviously talk about Kent in a minute because they really have been poor this season. But I think all credit must go to Glamorgan's bowlers.
Absolutely.
This game. Because obviously Michael Hogan, I mean, how old is he now? He must be pushing 40 now, Michael Hogan. And he's still producing fifers. David Lloyd, we talked about him last week, another couple of wickets. So, yeah, as I say, just massive credit to Glamorgan. Shame Marnus didn't get any runs. I hope he skips a week of getting runs again. And then after that, he can find four. To be fair, though, if Marnus got 100 and they got bowled out for 150... then I guess that won't be the end of the world because they won't get any bonus points. Marnus still get 100.
I think you're getting ahead of yourself here, Joe.
Maybe, but you get my point. You get my point because it would be ideal if he didn't this week.
Little bit wishful thinking there, but of course we will have to wait and see. But you mentioned about Marnus not getting runs. I would argue that that was the moment of the season so far, though. A 45-year-old Darren Stevens on a green seamer in Cardiff trapping the ICC's number three ranked test batsman in the entire world, LBW, with an in-swinger. You just couldn't write it. It was poetry in motion from Darren Stevens. It really was. But of course, Glamorgan in this game, completely dominant. And you mentioned about Michael Hogan. Again, I don't think he gets enough credit. And this season, he has been absolutely outstanding. So in four games, 18 wickets at 19.05. They are outstanding figures for the Australian seam bowler. So Michael Hogan as well in this game, absolutely outstanding, leading from the front, being that experienced figurehead for the Welsh side. And also James Harris as well, who, for those who don't know, came up through the Welsh Academy. So he used to play for the Welsh Minor Counties, used to play for Glamorgan, made the move to Middlesex, and now he's back at Glamorgan for a little bit of a loan stint. He was also very, very good, took figures of 2 for 5 in the second innings. And Tim van der Hooten as well. Like, we're going to keep on going through, and we could probably mention all 11 Glamorgan players, but to a man, they were absolutely outstanding. And one in particular is David Lloyd, Joe. How good has he been this season with both bat and ball in hand? He's accumulating runs for fun at the top of the order. And then as well, in the first innings, 4 for 11 with his medium pace with a new ball. He's brilliant, isn't he? How excited and how happy and pleased are you for David to see him in this purple patch?
I mean, firstly, 19 off 8 to win the game. That's class, firstly. I love to see that. But, yeah, I mean, as you say, he's doing really well. He's thriving, David Lloyd, at the top of the order. As I said last week, it's weird to see him opening the bowling. This week, he didn't open the bowling, obviously, because I said it last week. So, look, I mean, he basically mentioned to us, didn't he? When we spoke to him, this is his year. Pretty much what he said, in short. And that's not a good summary of the podcast, by the way. So don't let that put you off. Go and listen to it if you've not. So, I mean, it's great to see him just getting runs, I guess, and getting wickets and thriving. You know, as he said, this is his year so far. How many runs has he got this year? Must have got well over 250 now.
307 runs so far this season, 43.85. Joe, you're going to love his strike rate. 300
and how many?
307 runs in 8 innings, yeah, at 43.85. But look at his strike rate as well. This is the ease with which he's scoring his runs and the fluidity of his innings so far. 71.89 strike rate. Now, that is a Joe Nuttall approved strike rate, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, if he could top 200 or something like that, that'd be maybe a bit more interesting. But nah. I mean, that's a great strike rate. 60 of 103 in this game. And that is pretty much a great innings. Bearing in mind, he's facing Darren Stevens. We know how good he is. We talk about him often. He swings the ball around corners. Matt Mills as well. He's a very, very good bowler. So bearing in mind, he's facing Stevens, who obviously got another 5 for, obviously.
It's Darren Stevens.
Yep. Also, I don't know how many he's got now in his career. That's remarkable. How
30.
Many 5 has he? There's 35, that's just remarkable. He seems to get one every week. But yeah, bearing in mind he's facing Darren Stevens in tricky conditions, just generally because it's England. He's always in a swing.
And it was a green seamer.
It was a green seamer.
There was some grass.
So, I mean, that's a great knock. And as I say, it's great to see David Lloyd getting runs.
It is. And we're really happy for David as well because he was a very nice guest. Very, very 100%. Nice guy. Gave us a fantastic podcast. If you want to check that out as well, please feel free to do so. But yeah, he has been absolutely fantastic. And to be fair, Glamorgan now with Labuschagne, I know he didn't necessarily light up the world in his first game back, but even just having him back, that morale boost, isn't it? It's like having a talisman back. It's going to work wonders for Glamorgan. And if he does start churning out runs again, do not be surprised if Glam start to rise up the places in Group 3. Should be really, really interesting. But I suppose positivity about Glamorgan aside, Joe, we have to talk about Kent. And it is unfortunate because their start to the season, it's been woeful. It really has. Like, it's very difficult at the moment as well to really find many positives. I mean, in the last few weeks, we had Daniel Beldrummond, he scored 114. Jordan Cox scored a good 80 last week. You've had some decent performances from Darren Stevens, but they just haven't come together as a collective. And in this game, I know it's a green seamer. We mentioned about being difficult conditions against the likes of Hogan, van der Hooten, Lloyd, Harris, etc., etc. But to collapse from 88 for 1 to 137 all out, it's just not Kent, is it? This is not the Kent that we've seen in county championship cricket since coming back up in 2019. They seem to be a team that's full of confidence. They seem very resurgent. They looked very impressive. And this season, it's just all gone wrong. And I look at their batting, and batting, of course, is under the spotlight at the moment with regards to Kent. And not a single one of their batsmen is averaging over 40.
That's surprising, especially considering Bell Drummond got 100 against Lancs. Also, I would be quite worried. I'm quite worried about Zach Crawley's form as well, because he also can't really get many runs. I think he got 50 against Lancs and he got 33 in this game, but he's been inconsistent this year. Is his place assured in a test team? Probably is.
With Crawley,
I'm throwing a question out there.
I know. And of course, we do have to play a bit of devil's advocate and, you know, actually manifest these conversations in the first place. But with Crawley, again, I don't think he's the issue, because he's a young batsman. And again, he's making his way in international cricket. Let's not forget, 267 he scored against Pakistan at the Ajay
Bowl last year. Crawley should be dropped from Kent's team at all.
No, and of course...
I'm not saying that at all.
And he has just come back from an injury. Let's face it, on the India tour, he got injured, didn't he?
Missed
the first two games, sorry. So with regards to Crawley, again, maybe it's just the dip, but he's a young cricketer. He's an incredibly talented cricketer, earmarked for greatness. So again, with him, it is a disappointing start to the season. But again, a bit like I said with Lamonby, I think that he will come good as the season progresses. But I just wanted to look at
If you think it's a bit like with Lamonby, actually, just while you mentioned Tom Lamonby and how I said that, I will just say, maybe Zach Crawley should play second team. Saying that, Lamonby, we've got 70 the next week. So.
Yeah, can you also say that about Will Rhodes, so he can score a double century against Worcester?
Nah, you're all right. I won't say that about Will Rhodes, funnily enough.
But I just wanted to look at the batting averages, of course. I've just mentioned there. So at the moment, Ollie Robinson, the wicketkeeper batsman, 230 runs at 38.33. Darren Stevens, 221 runs at 36.83. Jordan Cox, 234 runs at 33.42. Now, again in there, Ollie Robinson is your wicketkeeper batsman. He's still young. He's still finding his way in the game. He's got a brilliant 84 the other week as well. So I don't think he's a guy who you can necessarily look at and pin the blame on. Darren Stevens is an all-rounder, so I don't think, again, you can really look at him. Jordan Cox, very young, burst onto the scene last year. Very impressive last week, that 80, but again, young and inexperienced, a bit like Crawley. The issue with Kent this season has been the experienced players, and that has been the problem. You mentioned Haino. In two games, four innings, 75 runs at 18.75. Jack Leaning, seven innings, 101 runs at 14.42. And Joe Denley as well, 93 runs in seven innings at 13.28. So this has been the problem with Kent. It's just been a lack of runs from their experienced core. And you mentioned Sam Billings, Joe. Is he necessarily the silver bullet? This is the question I wanted to ask you and Kent fans. Because we all know Sam Billings' pedigree, his acumen, just how good a player Sam Billings is in all formats of cricket. But is he the silver bullet? If Sam Billings comes in, for example, averages 50 right from the get-go, is that alone going to change Kent's fortunes? Or do you think that these experienced players, Bell Drummond as well, someone who I have immense respect for, as I do with Joe Denley as well, these guys are excellent for Kent. But do these guys also need to take responsibility themselves and start up their game? What are your thoughts on that?
Of course, Sam Billings coming back. Regardless, let's say Sam Billings comes, it's obviously not going to happen, but let's say Sam Billings plays in the next game and he goes and gets 200. That's not going to happen every week, realistically. Sam Billings is a great player, but potentially with the exception of Coley and Steve Smith, nobody is going to do that in county cricket. So,
and Dom Sibley.
Yeah, okay, whatever. But realistically, Sam Billings isn't going to single-handedly carry this team every single week, this Kent team every single week. So as important as it is to get Billings back, I don't think it's going to be... It can be the catalyst, sure, but if the rest of the batters keep playing how they are and Billings comes into the side and does incredibly well, then realistically, it's not really going to change much even so, because A, he's going to have no partners, and B, as I say, he's not going to perform like that every week, because it's just not humanly possible unless you're those three players that I mentioned. So... yeah, it is going to be hard to see how that changes, how they kind of sort it out if Billings comes back and they carry on. Kent could dig themselves into a really deep hole here, to be honest, because obviously only for this season, not for next season and the foreseeable future, but for this season, they could dig themselves into a really deep hole for all three forms. It's like I mentioned before with Notts. They could carry this momentum into the T20s and carry that into the rest of the championship games. Now, Kent are a good T20 side, but if they're low in confidence, have no momentum going into the T20s, they could struggle. And then it can carry back over into the championship. And then their players, a lot of their star players will go off to the 100. For example, Billings, Crawley, Bell Drummond, Denley, all these players are going to go off to the 100. They might struggle for the 50 overs. Their season might never get going. So, I mean, that's a very morbid, worst-case scenario way of looking at it, sure. But you can, I guess you can never really write anything off in sport. So, and then on the flip side of that, you can never write anything off in sport. So who's to say Kent won't end up coming through this and topping the group? Not topping the group, but, you know, maybe getting into group two. Because right now, let's be honest, Kent are looking like the team in group three most likely to get into group three or whatever it's called. I don't know what the names are, but you know what I mean. So they're struggling.
Well, yeah, they are. And we mentioned the batting as well. And I also look at the bowling. And I mentioned last week about a spinner, someone who can just come in, provide a bit of control, really, you know, put the pressure on from the other end. And I'm looking at the spinning stats this season. Denley, again, is a part-timer and he's averaging 85.5 with the ball. And then Jack Leaning as well, 55.75. Now, in comparison to your seamer like Darren Stevens as well, 19.76 is what he's averaging this season. He's taken 13 wickets. Is Kent's leading wicket taker. I just think maybe just adding a spinner. You've got nothing to lose. Bring in Marcus O'Riordan, for example, or maybe Imran Qayyum, or even Hamidullah Kadri. Just bring in one of these guys and see whether or not it will change something. Because I don't like being hypercritical of Kent. I like Kent as a county. They've got some fantastic players, but this has just been a really, really poor start to the season. And something needs to change. We mentioned there about Notts, didn't we, Joe? And you mentioned about the whole conversation about captaincy, personnel change as well. I just think Kent needs to try something different. And hopefully they will. Hopefully as well. I genuinely do hope that they can change their fortunes around. But at the moment, as you said, they're just struggling. And when you are in this bit of a rut, there aren't many games left now to really change that. I think Group 1 or Division 1 is completely out of reach now. I think Yorkshire, Lancs, I mean, potentially Northampton, Glam are also challenging
Lancs.
Well, you said anything, nothing in sport is guaranteed.
That is true. I did say that.
Exactly.
But, I did say that.
The usual words. But as I said, Kent are really, really lagging behind now. Rock bottom of Group 3. And they just need that spark. Whether that is Sam Billings coming back, whether that's adding a spinner, trying something different, changing up the batting lineup, something needs to change. And hopefully it does pay off for the southeastern side. So yeah, Joe, of course, wishing Kent the best of luck. Congratulations as well to Glamorgan. That was a fantastic performance this week and thoroughly, thoroughly deserving of a 10-wicket victory. But Joe, I suppose I'll pass over to you now. It's the moment you and Lancashire fans listening to the podcast have been waiting for. What were your thoughts on Lancashire's 5-wicket victory over Sussex?
Okay, so firstly, I think, I'll keep saying it, I think Lancashire have got in the top three bowling attacks in the country.
Out of interest, who would your top three be?
I don't want to give an order. I'll just say my top just, three.
Yeah.
So Lancs, I will probably put Somerset in there. And I don't know, I'm not sure who my third would be. I'll do them. Lancs and Somerset as my top two then in that case.
No Essex, no Warwickshire, Yorkshire.
This season, I will probably put those two as my top two. I would genuinely put Lancs up there.
I mean, Durham are up there as well. Let's not forget.
100%.
Mention them, Cass, Rushworth, Wood.
As you well know from this week.
And as you well know from previous county championship seasons,
well, this season Lancs are top, and so we are doing very, very well. We are doing very, very well at the moment, and it's great to see. Really, you know, one person I will mention is Liam Livingston. I'm so happy he's back to play red ball cricket with Lancs. Obviously, he would have been back soon anyway because the IPL has now been postponed. He came back due to bubble fatigue, and he's now available for Lancs now. I think it's quite curious. I've seen a lot of people kind of discuss this. Liam Livingston came at 7 in the first innings. Now, I think there's a perfectly good reason for this. You might also have the same theory as me. That's his way into England's test team, I think he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the logic, isn't it? It's the rationale. 100%.
And I think that's very smart. Now, personally, I think Liam Livingston's probably a red ball number 5. But But he's thinking ahead. You know, he's 27. He's coming to his prime years. Moeen Ali's 33, and Moeen, he's a great player, and I'm not going to get into the whole should he play for England debate, But at the end of the day,
be here all afternoon with Moy defending and Moeen.
Well, there you go then. But at the end of the day, Moeen Ali is 33. Probably not got too many more years of Test cricket ahead of him, considering the way he was treated in India, which I just think was poor by England.
Mm-hmm. And Best.
So, yeah, and Best as well. And Parkins. All the spinners. All
and
the
Stone.
Game. He's technically he's not a spinner, but
still, point has to be made.
So yeah, anyway, back to Liam Livingstone. As I say, I think he's a great player. I'm so happy he's in. Didn't really come off with the bat this week, but you know, he picked up wickets. He picked up 3 wickets in a match and bowled a lot of overs. 25 in that first innings and only 10 in the second innings, but he didn't really last for long. So I think this could be his way into the Test team. If I'm not saying he's going to get in, because I don't think he's not going to get in against New Zealand, but you know what? If he has a good summer, who knows? Who knows? So the only other person I really want to focus on is Keaton Jennings. So he has really struggled this season, Keaton Jennings. His high score before this game, I think, was 27. And actually, in the first innings and the second innings, he was brilliant. So he got 60 in the first innings, 94 not out in the second innings, won the game for Lancs in the second innings. So great to see him getting runs. Alex Davis, brilliant. Josh Bohannon, yet again, I'll say it every single week, Josh Bohannon is quality. Mm-hmm. 100%. Outside chance for the Ashes, Josh Bohannon, to go. 100%. He's such a good player. I know he didn't get masses of runs this week, but he got 37. I don't know what his first-class average is, but if it was around 37, then that's a respectable average. So I'm telling you, 100% Josh Bohannon is an outside bet for the Ashes. I'm not saying he's definitely going to make it, but I think he's obviously not going to be the first name on the plane, but he's an outside bet if he can score runs, especially if there's a few injuries, because you can never know what's going to happen, or dips in form. Bohannon's an outside bet.
Interesting. And of course, only time will tell, Joe. You never know in cricket. That is the beauty of this game. I'm surprised...
Also, I forgot to mention Saqib Mahmood.
Fair enough. But one name I'm surprised you didn't mention, of course, Saqib Mahmood, who is your boy Parkinson as well, of course, but Tom Bailey. How impressive has he been this season? Because he's currently Lancs' his leading wicket taker, I believe. I think he's taken 18 wickets or something along those lines so far. He has taken 18 wickets as well, at a pretty good average as well, 20.11. And again, in this game, taking 6 wickets. How impressed have you been with him this season from a Lancashire perspective?
Yeah, I think Tom Bailey, I mean, I mentioned it in loads of podcasts. I don't think he's going to get selected for England. I think his window's gone now I think he should have at least been considered like 2 or 3 years ago. But I think Tom Bailey is a really, really good bowler. He's just turned 30, so he is in his prime now. These are his best years. And he kind of reminds me a little bit of, obviously not numbers-wise, but the way he bowls and even the way he bats at times, Glenn Chappell a little bit. You know, I feel like he can go on playing as long as Chappell did. Big statement to make, I know, but... he just really reminds me of Glenn Chappell. Certainly in Red Bull cricket, I just think the way they bowl, they're similar like builds. They bowl similar lines and lengths. They're very similar skilled bowlers. And as I say, with the bat, they can score runs. You know, they can. So I think Tom Bailey could be in this Lancs Red Bull side for the next 7-8 years. I'm talking like 37, 30. Yeah, I think he really could be. Obviously, he's only going to get slower. A bit like Graham Onions as well. Again, not numbers-wise, but Graham Onions was playing county cricket up until last year. Well, technically not, because he didn't play last year, but technically he retired in 2020. So a bit like that, I think Bailey can be in this Lancs team for years. I think he's a great player.
Oh, he is. I like Tom Bailey. Again, mentioned under the radar every single week, a bit cliche term here on TCCP, but definitely one who needs a bit more recognition in my opinion. But on the flip side of Lancs, of course, Lancashire have been brilliant. I mean, one of the most impressive teams in county cricket so far this season, as Joe beams with delight hearing those compliments for his team. But just to mention Sussex as well, of course, Jack Carson really continues to impress me. In this game, 7 for 96 for his match figures. I'm hoping that he selects England over Ireland at this point, because he is a fantastic young spinner born in Northern Ireland.
What's it looking more likely?
Well, I think at the moment, you'd have to say Ireland, because...
I mean, if it was me in his position, I would choose Ireland, because I think Jack Carson can make the Ireland team.
Yeah, over someone like a George Dockrell or Andy McBrien as well, who's coming.
Yeah, he's only young, and as you say, they're coming to the end of their careers. McBrien, Dockrell, those kind of
Dockrell
guys.
Dockrell isn't.
Dockrell is like 35, isn't he?
No, he isn't. Dockrell's in his 20s.
Oh, well, apologies then to George Dockrell. But still,
My boy Dockers.
Yeah, I think if I was Jack Carson, I would definitely choose Ireland. So, I mean, it'll be, as I say, interesting to see which one he chooses.
It will be. It'll be very, very interesting. But again, I'm still hopeful. I do hope that he does select England. But again, if Ireland do come calling, I imagine that he could go for the men in green. But yeah, he's such an impressive spinner. He really is. Continue to watch out for him in this season. Also, congratulations to Jamie Atkins on debut. That was very, very nice. Also took his first ever wicket in first-class cricket. So congratulations to Jamie Atkins. Again, these young Sussex seamers, which Luke, who's Sussex's analyst, mentioned to us on a podcast. Guys like him, Sean Hunt, for example, George Garton, Crocombe, Ollie Robb as well. They've got some fantastic seamers, haven't they, Sussex?
Yeah, George Garton as well is someone who I nearly mentioned before when we were talking about Overton. I think he's also someone in line, maybe not in line, but is a good shout for an England place in the near future.
Outside shout.
Again, can bat, similar to Bohannon, outside shout for the Ashes maybe. Who knows? He can bat, which obviously helps. Maybe he can. I think a perfect place for him would be 8 or 9. I don't see him as a Sam Curran or a Ben Stokes, because they're proper. Obviously, Stokes is a proper batter. Even Sam Curran, I view as a proper batter. Not to say that Garton isn't, of course, but I see him as more of a bowler than a batter, I guess. So I see an 8 or a 9 batting for him. Jofra is great entertainment at number 8, but he's not really a number 8. So
tests, no.
No. Maybe someone like that. Yeah. Of course. As we saw in IPL 2020. Mm-hmm. But George Garton, I mean, it'd be great if he could, you know, kind of find himself in an English shirt soon, because he's had T10 experience. He's played around the world now. So it's interesting to see how his career develops.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, another one to keep a special eye on this season. And just before we wrap up today's podcast then as well, just to mention to Delray Rawlins. Really, really enterprising in this game. 42 and 45, respectively, in both innings, which included 9 boundaries and 2 sixes. So it's nice to see Delray in a bit of form, in a bit of rhythm. He's a very, very exciting player to watch. And of course, Stian van Zyl as well in the first inning, scoring 79 from 145. So although it's disappointing for Sussex fans, maybe the results have lost both times 2 lengths this season, haven't they? But I still think it's been a decent start to the season. They've showed a lot of heart, a lot of fight, a lot of courage. So fair play to Sussex, and of course, congratulations to Lanx on, well, continuing that incredibly impressive start to the season. But Joe, before we do end today's podcast, we do, of course, have our game to watch for next week. Now, my one is going to be obvious. It is the Derby at Edgbaston, Warwickshire versus Worcestershire, Bears versus Pears. It's going to be an interesting one because both sides are incredibly tight towards the top. So Joe, in your opinion, what is your game to watch out for in round 5?
You know what, I think that game, obviously, that game is up there. It's a derby. I think Lance Glamorgan as well. Again, it sounds really biased for both of us. But Marnus coming up against, as I said, what I think is one of the best bowling attacks in the country right now. I hope you would agree with that as well. I'm sure you would.
I do. Put them up there. I mentioned them.
Yeah. So there you go. That's proof. I'm just proving I'm not being biased.
Lamb have been impressive as well.
100%. So I think Marnus facing the likes of Lamb, Wood, Mahmood. Well, I don't know if Wood's going to play. Lambs have been rotating the seamers, but Lamb, Wood, Mahmood, Bailey.
Jimmy, if he's fit.
Yeah, Jimmy. That would be great prep for the Ashes as well. So it's going to be very interesting how that game pans out. And yeah, I think the Notts game as well is going to be very good. The Notts Essex game, because Notts have just won. Maybe they're going to, as we said earlier, keep their momentum and beat the champions. So that'll be interesting. And also Hampshire Somerset.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a good game as well. So I'll say those 3. I've named more than one there, but overall.
Hey, no worries. I mean, it's a good round, isn't it? Round 5 promises to be very, very good. And then, of course, we do have a break. But yeah, Joe, I think that's a good way to end what's been a bumper episode of the County Cricket Podcast. So, Joe, mate, thank you very much for joining me today, as always. And then to all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.